and margarines. There are now 4 case-controlled studies from the Mediterranean showing a strong protective benefit of olive oil. Breast benefits of olive oil. As you eliminate omega-6 fatty acids from your diet and add omega-9 fatty acids, your breast, too, will accumulate more omega-9 fatty acids, neutralizing the booster effect. As olive oil displaces starches in the diet of Mediterranean peoples, the risk of breast cancer actually decreases. Olive oil is also loaded with powerful antioxidants that can drop your oxidant load. How to use olive oil? Olive oil should be used as a deliberate replacement for dangerous fats and refined carbohydrates. However, adding olive oil to these foods will do nothing more than make you fat. Dr. Scott Grundy of the famous Texas Health Sciences Center in Dallas has a simple recommendation. Just add 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil to a healthy diet. You do this by adding it to a salad or vegetables. Or you can use it in cooking vegetables. The olive oil controversy. You may say, hey, you said that fat may cause breast cancer. How can you recommend fat? You're right. Olive oil is a fat. If you eat enough of it, you will become fat. In fact, Crete, the site of the healthiest diet in the world, has suffered a decline in the health of its citizens with the addition of more calories and more olive oil over the last several decades. The answer to your question is simple. If you are willing to eat a very high-quality vegetarian diet without olive oil, that is your healthiest choice. However, if you currently eat a high-fat diet, you are far better off replacing omega-6 fats, trans fats, and saturated fats with olive oil. If you currently eat a low-quality, low-fat diet with lots of refined carbohydrates, you are far better off replacing those carbohydrates with olive oil. Other monounsaturated fats. Alicia Wolk, Ph.D., from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, studied 61,471 women between the ages of 40 and 76, from 1987 to 1990. In the January 12, 1998, Archives of Internal Medicine, Dr. Wolk reported that monounsaturated fat reduced the risk of breast cancer by 45%. The study credited canola as well as olive oil. To date, the bulk of the world literature links the use of olive oil to less breast cancer. That's why most experts continue to recommend olive oil over other monounsaturated fats. Recommendation: include 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day on salads or in cooking. Omega-3 fats. The one quick step you can take to cut your risk of breast cancer is to consume omega-3 fatty acids every day. Omega-3 fatty acids cut the estrogen booster effect more powerfully than any other food. Scientists first observed the protective effect of omega-3 fatty acids in Greenland Eskimo women who appeared to have no breast cancer. These women have a diet with one of the highest concentrations of omega-3s on Earth. When they went to the lab, scientists found that, sure enough, omega-3s cause human breast cancers to decrease in size in both test tubes and animals. They even prevented metastases to the lungs in mice. A French study showed the same phenomenon in humans. Women with the lowest amounts of an omega-3 fat in the tissue surrounding their tumors were 5 times as likely to develop metastatic disease. Breast benefits of omega-3. Fish oils can change the microenvironment of the breast in an astoundingly short 3-month period, quickly blunting the booster effect. By taking 10 grams of fish oils a day, breast cancer survivors at UCLA tripled the amount of omega-3 fatty acids in their breasts. The body stores such an enormous amount of omega-6 fats that it would take at least 3 years to wash them out of your system. During those 3 years, you will want to protect yourself with omega-3 fatty acids, which will strongly counteract them. Clinical trials are now underway in breast cancer survivors at UCLA based on a wealth of human observation and animal and test tube data. Women in these trials have tripled the amount of omega-3 fats in their breasts. Safety. As powerful as the effects of omega-3 fatty acids are, it's also critical to look at them for their safety. At very high doses, omega-3 fatty acids cause bleeding, even bleeding into the brain. You may say, gosh, that's a hell of a risk to take to prevent cancer. The good news is that that dose is many times what you need to take. Thousands of American women at high risk or who are breast cancer survivors now take omega-3s at their doctor's recommendation. Doctors from Sloan Kettering to UCLA feel comfortable prescribing omega-3s for their patients. If you take blood thinners or have clotting problems, be sure to have your blood clotting factors measured if you and your doctor opt to try this strategy. There are two other side effects, diarrhea and smell. Diarrhea affects a minority of women. A good way to avoid this side effect is to go easy by starting with just a gram a day. Fish oil does smell if it is of poor quality. Buy high-quality oils and use them quickly to avoid the smell. The longer fish oil capsules sit, the quicker the fish smell and flavor comes back, even if it's been steam-stripped. Dose. Patients in the UCLA trial consumed 10 grams of fish oil per day, which translates into 10 fish oil capsules daily. These capsules were taken in a divided dose 3 times a day, breakfast 3, lunch 3, and dinner 4. The brand used at UCLA is Nature Made Vitamins, pro-EPA, Mission Hills, California. Dr. John Glaspie determined that at the 10-gram dose, there was no increased tendency to bleed. However, if you have a bleeding disorder or are taking aspirin or NSAID therapy, Motrin, Advil, ibuprofen, or an anticoagulant, you can ask your doctor to perform a bleeding test called a PTT, partial thromboplastin time, to be certain that fish oils don't increase your risk of bleeding. In one major cancer center, patients were accidentally given a large overdose. While there was no bleeding, women did rapidly gain weight and facial hair. The not-so-funny joke was that they had begun to look like the Eskimo women who gave doctors the idea in the first place. Since 10 grams works, and works quickly, there is no need for a higher dose. UCLA adds 800 IU of vitamin E a day to prevent oxidation of the fish oil. Since a recent study showed vitamin E may increase the risk of breast cancer, you want to ask your doctor if adding vitamin E to fish oil makes sense. Since capsules are much more palatable than fish oil in liquid form, virtually all clinical trials opt for capsules. Fish oils are now being recommended as a part of any program of healthy living. If you and your doctor decide against fish oil capsules as part of your breast cancer prevention program, you should still consider ingesting the generally recommended 1 to 2 gram a day dose in the foods that you eat. While the U.S. government has not made a recommendation on fish oil ingestion, England has. The British Nutrition Foundation recommends 1.25 grams a day. Practically speaking, it's difficult to get much more than 2 grams a day of fish oils without the use of supplements. Source: The American Health Foundation, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and UCLA, plus most major medical centers conducting clinical trials, are dispensing omega-3 fatty acids in pill form in order to determine exactly how much omega-3 women have consumed. Clearly, omega-3 from fish would be vastly preferable. It is better absorbed, and it comes with many other nutrients. However, fish fat can concentrate chemical estrogens. The section Step 8, Avoid Chemical Estrogens, tells you which fish are safe and which are not. At home, we like to alternate between supplements and fish. The days we have a big piece of salmon for lunch, we'll skip the fish oil capsule. Consumer's Guide to Supplements. For those who cannot or will not eat fish, or for those concerned about the heavy metals and pesticides contained in fish, supplements are the only way to go. For women at high risk of breast cancer, this is the fastest, most effective way of changing breast fat. However, most top researchers in the field feel that women should take large amounts of fish oil for significant periods only under the confines of a research study or careful clinical observation. Contaminants. Fish oils are so highly processed that it would probably be impossible to find any measurable amounts of contaminants, say experts assembled by the Food and Nutrition Board of the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. Heavy metals don't accumulate in fish oil because the processing techniques take it out. Steam stripping removes pesticides, PCBs, and heavy metals. Fish oils that taste very fishy may not be steam stripped. Look for molecularly distilled fish oils for the cleanest product. Real fish. New data shows almost non-existent levels of pesticide or heavy metal contamination in fish. These levels have dramatically dropped in species used for obtaining omega-3 oils, according to the U.S. Department of Fisheries. There are no good alternative sources of information to confirm or deny this level of safety. Several meals a week of fish is a good recommendation. The insert lays out the total amount of omega-3 fatty acids in various fish and fish oils. Look for the omega-3 fatty acids EPA and DHA. They stand for eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid. They are the most critically important omega-3 fatty acids found in fish. The insert lists the amount of EPA and DHA plus their combined total. New food labeling that will include omega-3 content is being considered. Fish oils are shown at the top for comparison. For the fish richest in fish oil, 100 grams of fish flesh will contain 2 grams of fish oil. 100 grams is slightly less than a quarter of a pound. As you can see, to consume 10 grams of fish oil is the equivalent of eating a pound and a quarter of fish a day. That's a pretty remarkable amount. Practically speaking, you can get the first 2 grams by eating fish. Any more and you're stuck with fish oil capsules. A special note on tuna. Oil-packed tuna usually employs omega-6 vegetable oil, really defeating the purpose of eating the fish in the first place. Do shop for water-packed tuna and look to be sure that it has a high fish oil content. Cod liver oil has high amounts of vitamins A and D. This on its own is a good thing, but to eat 10 grams a day of fish oils might mean taking an overdose of vitamins A and D. The oil-based vitamins A and D accumulate in the body and don't flush out, so you can accumulate toxic amounts. Other benefits. Omega-3s are increasingly being found to be powerful supernutrients for a variety of diseases, from rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis to heart disease. In fact, omega-3s are being promoted as the heart-healthiest fat. Eating lots of fish is even better than a vegetarian diet for reducing levels of certain blood fats that increase the risk of heart attack. Analysis. Fish oils are the fastest and most effective way of changing breast fats. Aggressive studies are underway to prove they can lower the risk of cancer in human beings. Committing to a year or two of use while waiting to see how clinical trials develop should prove a low-risk proposition. Recommendation. Using supplements or safe fish sources, take 10 grams of fish oil a day if you're at high breast cancer risk and 2 grams a day if you're at lower risk. Step 3. Make good estrogens. Only one kind of vegetable interferes with the estrogen pathway, and that is a cruciferous vegetable. These get their name from the cross-like stem they all have in common, from broccoli to cauliflower. European women who ate more cabbage had a lower breast cancer death rate. Cruciferous vegetables decreased the risk by 40% in a Wisconsin study. How do they work? Their secret ingredient is called indole-3 carbinol, which channels the breakdown products of estrogen into far more good estrogen, 2-hydroxyestrone, than bad estrogen, 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone. As with the good and bad cholesterol in your blood, you can increase and decrease the amount of either form of estrogen. The Journal of the National Cancer Institute reported that the bad estrogen may be a major factor in breast cancer development in Finnish women, since it permanently binds to the estrogen receptor, sort of like pressing a car horn and finding it stuck. All other estrogens attach briefly and then are released. Strang Cancer Prevention Center's Dr. Jack Fishman believes bad estrogen could be a very big part of the whole picture. Women with breast cancer have almost twice as much bad estrogen as those without. Bad estrogen also causes mutations in breast cells. Another bad estrogen, 4-hydroxy, may directly damage DNA, reports Dr. Ercole Cavaliere of the Epley Institute for Research in Cancer at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Breast benefits of cruciferous vegetables. The active ingredient in cruciferous vegetables, indole-3-carbinol, diverts estrogen into more good estrogens. Indole-3-carbinol can double the amount of good estrogen while decreasing the bad, as reported in a study in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. My friend, John Michnovitz, MD, of the Strang Cancer Prevention Center, calls this a detoxifying pathway. A University of California at Berkeley study shows that the indole-3-carbinol from broccoli halts the growth of breast cancer cells by turning off a key enzyme important for the cell's growth cycle. Kinds of vegetables containing indole-3-carbinol: bitter cress, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, collard, horseradish, kale, mustard seed, radishes, rutabaga, Savoy cabbage, super broccoli, turnip, watercress. Super tasters. Don't like cruciferous vegetables? Little wonder. You are what scientists call a super taster, a person who finds these vegetables taste unusually bitter. Researchers believe that you are at a genetic disadvantage because you won't eat the vegetables that have the most powerful cancer-fighting effect. I've got to admit, I'm one. I've never liked these vegetables, and neither does my family. I do like fresh broccoli, not the limp, steamed kind. Coleslaw may be the most palatable choice of cruciferous vegetable, if made with the right low-fat dressing. Consumer tips. The active ingredient, indole-3-carbinol, can be deactivated by heat. For that reason, you'll want to avoid badly wilted cruciferous vegetables. Lightly steaming or stir-frying them can maintain the active ingredient. Dose. Pioneers Leon Bradlow and Jack Fishman conducted a dosing study of indole-3-carbinol and found no beneficial effect until volunteers ingested 300 milligrams a day. The fly in the ointment is that you'd have to eat an enormous amount of cruciferous vegetables to ingest those 300 milligrams, the equivalent of 2 heads of cabbage. One published study showed that 500 milligrams created a pronounced shift toward the good estrogen. That's approximately 50 times what the average American currently eats. Japanese and Chinese women who eat large amounts of cruciferous vegetables consume only 100 milligrams of indole-3-carbinol per day. The bottom line is that it's incredibly difficult to get 300 milligrams a day from eating cruciferous vegetables. The Strang Lab recommends eating these vegetables for the indole-3-carbinol and for their fiber, vitamin, and antioxidant properties. But to get the full effect, you'll need to supplement. Capsules are the best way to ensure that you're getting enough indole-3-carbinol, and they're readily available in health food stores. Don't take antacids when taking capsules or eating cruciferous vegetables because they interfere with absorption. 300 to 500 milligrams a day will increase the production of food estrogens. Recommendation: eat 2 or more servings of cruciferous vegetables a day. Consider, with your physician, taking 500 milligrams of indole-3-carbinol as a supplement if you're at high risk. Step 4. Lower insulin. Not long ago, exciting first-ever evidence finally linked insulin to breast cancer. In her striking breakthrough research, Dr. Pamela Goodwin from the University of Toronto found one of the highest risks mentioned in this program: a 283% increased risk of breast cancer in women with high insulin levels. She studied 99 premenopausal women who were just diagnosed with node-negative breast cancer, and 99 age-matched women who were biopsied but didn't have cancer. What is so striking about this study is that many of these women were quite lean. This is one of the first clues as to why lean premenopausal women may be at increased risk for breast cancer. Another group out of St. Thomas Hospital in London also postulates that the high insulin that results from high animal fat intake and weight gain after the age of 30 could contribute to the increase in postmenopausal breast cancer. Case control studies have shown that high insulin and abdominal obesity are risk markers for postmenopausal breast cancer. Too much insulin may also stimulate growth activity in existing breast cancer. Most of us know insulin as the hormone that regulates blood sugar levels. However, it has a far more nefarious role. Insulin acts as a growth factor for cancer development. Here's how. There are insulin receptors on the surfaces of breast cells, just like there are estrogen receptors. Insulin enhances the likelihood that cells become cancerous by attaching to these receptors. Cancer cells also have insulin receptors. When insulin attaches to the receptor, it turns it on, leading to cancer growth. Clearly, a high insulin level provides much more stimulation for the breast cell to change, grow, or divide. How high that insulin level rises is directly related to your diet. How to determine your insulin level. The next time you have blood work, ask your doctor to include an insulin level. It's available at most commercial labs. The insulin level is measured after an overnight fast and can range from 79, an excellent value, to 190, considered very high. As you'd expect, insulin levels are high in women with excess body fat, especially if that fat is carried above the waist. A close friend of my wife and mine was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 39. She is quite lean and wondered how it was possible for her to contract breast cancer if she wasn't overweight. The most interesting contributing factor that's come forward is a high insulin level. Surprisingly, insulin levels are highest in the thinnest women. Women who eat a high refined flour, low fiber diet, even if it is low in fat, are especially apt to run high insulin levels. How to lower your insulin level. If your blood sugar and insulin levels are elevated, you may have type 2 diabetes. This illness can result in severe complications, from blindness and heart disease to loss of a kidney or limb. You will want to consult with an endocrinologist who specializes in diabetes to plan your treatment. A cornerstone of the treatment of anyone with high insulin should be to lower glucose load. Whether you have diabetes or simply have an insulin level high enough to increase your risk of breast cancer, the following steps to lower your insulin level will be extremely useful. Avoid saturated fats. Saturated fats increase insulin resistance. Insulin resistance simply means that your body does not react to normal amounts of insulin and admit sugar into cells. This causes your body to make much higher levels of insulin to compensate, thus contributing to weight gain and cancer risk. Key saturated fats are found in whole dairy products and fatty red meats. Decrease upper body obesity. Decreasing obesity leads to lowered insulin resistance and decreased production of insulin. Exercise. Regular physical activity has long been shown to decrease insulin requirements. It does so by allowing sugar into muscle cells lacking insulin so that the body does not have to make as much. Decrease glucose load. Given the critical importance of glucose load to weight loss and lowering insulin levels, the following section is devoted to showing you how to decrease glucose load. Note: the increased risk of breast cancer linked to insulin does not apply to type 1 diabetics who make no insulin of their own. It does apply to type 2 diabetics who make too much insulin to compensate for insulin resistance. Recommendation: to lower your insulin level, avoid saturated fats and reduce your glucose load. Step 5. Drop glucose overload. In my last book, Dr. Bob Arnott's Revolutionary Weight Control Program, I called glucose load the premier concept in nutrition today, the most effective way of becoming lean and controlling your weight. Since publication of that book, dozens of new articles have appeared in the scientific literature supporting the concept and demonstrating the links between high load and other diseases, from heart disease to childhood obesity. Now it is linked to breast cancer. A high-starch diet predicted breast cancer in an Italian population by a substantial 40%. First, let's look at what we mean by the term glucose load. As I reported in Revolutionary Weight Control, from hard candy to complex carbohydrates, ultimately, most carbohydrates are broken down into glucose. Glucose load is a measure of the total amount of glucose that passes through the bloodstream in a day. The more glucose jammed into the bloodstream, the higher the glucose load. After a large meal, that load can reach significant levels and signal the body to produce large amounts of insulin. Now, many of us falsely believe that it's only candy bars, ice cream, sugary sodas, and other sweets that affect glucose levels. Most weight-conscious women believe that they successfully avoid these sugary foods, and that's the trap. They eat, instead, hundreds of foods that rapidly convert into glucose. The most surprising are some highly promoted complex carbohydrates. White flour products, from pasta and cereal to bagels and breads, all earn the title complex carbos. Many are even labeled low-fat foods. Though these carbohydrates are indeed complex because they are made up of enormous sugar molecules instead of tiny, simple sugars, these quickly break down into glucose, many faster than table sugar itself. When you sum up the total of all the glucose produced by a day's worth of carbohydrates, you arrive at what researchers call your total glucose load. To determine your glucose load, you first need to know how much each individual food will raise your blood sugar. Here's how that is determined. Determining the glucose content of individual foods. After you eat food on an empty stomach, your blood sugar is measured at regular intervals until a peak level is detected. Dr. David Jenkins of the University of Toronto and other researchers made this measurement for hundreds of foods. Each carbohydrate was assigned a glucose value on a scale that ranges from a low of 0 to a high of over 100. Researchers used the term glycemic index, while nutrition aficionados used the abbreviation GI. Carbohydrates low on the index, such as beans, generate a very small rise in blood sugar after they are eaten. That puts an insignificant load on your system. Foods with a high glycemic index, from instant mashed potatoes and white bread, Twinkies, and muffins to bagels, are digested very quickly, giving rise to high blood sugars. Since these high glycemic index foods are basically glucose bombs, the more of these foods in your diet, the higher your blood sugar. Most nutrition-conscious consumers know to avoid foods with a high glycemic index. But where virtually all of us go wrong is with too many medium glycemic index foods, such as rice, pasta, potatoes, and white flour products. These carbohydrates, comprising thousands of glucose molecules strung together, enter your body like a Trojan horse. Since they don't taste sweet or look sweet, we eat tons of them, falsely believing that they are healthy for us. But once your digestive tract strips their disguise by breaking them apart, millions of glucose molecules flow freely into your bloodstream like water through a broken dike. To calculate glucose load, add up the individual glycemic index of each carbohydrate you eat. Here's an example. These four complex carbohydrates, each of which has an astoundingly high glycemic index, have a sky-high glucose load, adding up to a total of 351. French baguette, 95. Instant rice, 87. Baked potato, 85. Corn flakes, 84. Total, 351. However, what troubles the nation's leading nutritionists is that you need not have foods with an outrageously high glycemic index to have a high glucose load. Foods with a moderate glycemic index, like white rice or pasta, can give you a sky-high glucose load if you eat more than several servings a day. While individual foods that cause large rises in blood sugar are said to have a high glycemic index, An entire meal built on foods with a high or even medium glycemic index is said to have a high glucose load. Now, let's look at the effect of five moderate glycemic index foods on glucose load. Pizza with cheese, 60. White potato, 56. White pita bread, 57. Durum spaghetti, 55. Tortellini with cheese, 50. Total, 278. That glucose load still adds up to a whopping 278. How glucose overload makes you fat. Excess insulin is the most likely reason that you are overweight and the biggest reason that those extra pounds will kill you. Insulin is the trigger that switches your body's weight-gaining functions into high gear and is the hormone most responsible for the ballooning of America. How? Too much insulin jam-packs fat cells with fats, slams the door, and throws away the key. What's the link between glucose load and insulin? The higher your glucose load, the higher your insulin level, because it is glucose load that drives insulin. Insulin is up to 30 times more effective at moving extra calories into fat than into muscle, making it an effective superstuffer of fat cells. The more fat you eat, the further those floodgates swing open. That's why the combination of fat and high glycemic index is so incredibly fattening. Breast benefits of a low glucose load. A low glucose load decreases insulin levels, hunger, and upper body fat. A low glucose load also decreases the amount of triglycerides in the blood. A recent study demonstrates that women with elevated triglyceride levels had an increased risk of breast cancer. How to drop glucose load. Avoid foods with a high glycemic index. These foods cause the largest increase in your blood sugar level. You'll find some real surprises on this list, such as bagels, hamburger buns, instant rice, and macaroni with cheese. See the insert on high glycemic index foods. The higher the number, the higher your blood sugar will rise after you eat them. If you really love these foods, mix them with extremely low GI foods once you've lost the weight you want to. An example would be low GI soybeans mixed with high GI rice, which averages out to a moderate glucose load. An excess of glucose makes most people sleepier than they otherwise would be, leading them to eat even more in an attempt to increase energy. Avoid most moderate glycemic index foods. If you are really trying to lose weight, eliminate these foods as well. The real surprise is how much medium glycemic index foods add to the glucose load. They appear to be safe and conventional, but eaten in even moderate quantities, they will make you fat. The higher the food's glycemic index, the higher your blood sugar will be after eating them. A diet full of them will keep you hungry. Just think of how hungry you are after a meal of Chinese takeout, which is heavy on rice and noodles. The food literally washes through your system too fast to keep you satisfied for long. Refer to the insert on moderate glycemic index foods. Substitute low glycemic index foods for all other carbos. Low glycemic index foods drop your insulin level. The Pritikin Longevity Center in Santa Monica, California, reports a fall in the average fasting insulin of 25% to 30% for those individuals eating carbohydrates in their very unrefined state. You may literally eat all the low GI carbos you want because they are so filling and have such a small effect on glucose load. Examples are beans, cruciferous vegetables, and high-fiber, low-sugar cereals. Refer to the low glycemic index foods in the inserts. Eat more protein. When a meal is stripped of carbohydrate and only the protein remains, insulin levels rise very little. Protein also helps to kill hunger and energize the brain while keeping insulin levels low. Protein is a great way to displace junk carbohydrates from your diet. By replacing carbohydrate in a meal with protein, you decrease your glucose load. The mark to aim for is 15 to 20% protein. Dean Ornish's program uses a higher protein intake to decrease triglycerides, which are also a risk factor. If you're incorporating soy into your program, you'll easily hit that mark. The danger of protein is only if you're on a very high-calorie diet and eating massive amounts. Eat more soluble fiber. The higher your fiber intake, the lower your risk of running a high insulin level. Soluble fiber forms a gummy gel that lines the intestine and slows absorption, blunting the uptake of glucose and decreasing the insulin response. The following section includes a complete list of soluble fibers. Recommendation: avoid all foods with high and medium glycemic indexes until you have lowered your body weight to where you would like to be. Then, you may want to consider adding several medium glycemic index foods a day, if you really miss them. Step 6. Increase fiber. Fiber may be the most underrated of all breast cancer preventive nutrients. Yet at major cancer centers such as Memorial Sloan Kettering, it is finally getting its due. Moisha Shika, Director of Clinical Nutrition, says, "Absolutely, I think fiber is so important." Breast benefits of fiber. There's little wonder why fiber is such a powerful preventive agent. Fiber interrupts most steps of the estrogen pathway to decrease the blood level of an estrogen called estrone sulfate by a powerful 36%. That translates into a 54% decrease in cancer risk for women on a high fiber diet. David Rose reports in the journal Nutrition that supplementing the diet with wheat bran to achieve a high fiber intake causes a significant reduction in serum estrone and estradiol concentration of premenopausal women. Why? Fiber builds more estrogen carriers, traps estrogen in the bowel so it can't be recirculated, decreases glucose load, cuts hunger, and speeds weight loss. Few Americans benefit from fiber because our diet is notoriously low in fiber by world standards. The lack of fiber allows free estrogen to soar. Dose. Most studies don't show much of a relation between fiber and breast cancer, simply because most people consume so little fiber, an average of roughly 12 grams per day. 20 grams of wheat bran alone significantly decreases estrogen levels. Sloan Kettering recommends at least 25 to 30 grams for its breast cancer patients. I personally recommend 30 to 50 grams of fiber. Consumer's Guide to Fiber. You will be quite surprised that most foods, even those famous for fiber, have vanishingly little fiber in them. This guide will help you select the foods that are highest in fiber. In choosing, keep in mind that there are two different kinds of fiber: insoluble and soluble. Here's how they stack up. Insoluble fiber is best for binding estrogen in the bowel. The ingredient that binds estrogen most tightly is cellulose. Wheat bran is an excellent source of cellulose. Refer to the insert High Insoluble Fiber Foods. When I look at the nutritional label on a package, I like to see at least 5 grams of fiber with less than 5 grams of sugar per serving. Additional benefits. Heart disease. For every extra gram you eat each day, your risk of heart disease decreases by 2%, as reported by the Harvard School of Public Health. My wife and I have found fiber to be the single most important factor in controlling our weight. By slowing digestion and making food last longer, increased fiber causes hunger to drop rather dramatically. For instance, a key study looked at satiety with different kinds of breads. Where virtually fiber-free white bread could be eaten till the cows came home, higher-fiber whole wheat bread had a natural break built into it. Study participants simply became full after a few slices, instead of working their way through an entire loaf. High-fiber foods are bulkier, have fewer calories, and take longer to eat, which gives your brain a chance to register your food intake before you overeat. Let's first look at the best anti-hunger fiber. Soluble fiber. This is the best fiber for controlling hunger, blood sugar, and cholesterol. It so successfully curbs hunger that it is justifiably called the king of filler-uppers. Soluble fiber is clearly the superior fiber, But you need not choose between the two types. Every food that contains 1 gram of soluble fiber usually contains another 3 grams of insoluble fiber. A high-fiber diet gives you excellent control over your blood sugar and insulin levels because the fiber holds sugars in the stomach so that they are released into the bloodstream far more slowly. Please refer to the insert on high-soluble fiber foods. From a purely practical standpoint, you'll find beans and high-fiber breakfast cereals to be the most reasonable way to eat large quantities of soluble fiber. Otherwise, you're faced with eating huge quantities of vegetables or grains. For instance, you would need 1,600 calories of Brussels sprouts to get 10 grams of soluble fiber. Contrast that to 1 cup of soybeans, which contains 10 grams of soluble fiber. Start slowly. A cup of beans rich in soluble fiber can make you uncomfortably full for many hours. In fact, you may still feel full 12 hours later. You may even feel guilty that you've eaten too much. What will surprise you is that you are far fuller on just 300 calories of beans than you ever would be on 1,500 calories of prime rib and potatoes. Soluble fibers are pulling water into the upper intestine, creating even more bulk and a greater sense of fullness. To avoid a sense of discomfort, begin by eating no more than a half of a cup of soluble fiber foods per day. Increase your ration by 1/4 cup every several days until you reach 1.5 cups. If you've eaten what you think are lots of high-fiber foods and failed to get the effect that you've just read about, take a close look at the kind of fiber you've been eating. Most processed foods are notoriously poor in soluble fiber. The other major concern is gas. In the first 2 weeks of a high-fiber diet, you will notice an increase in gas. However, as the good gut bacteria win over the bad, you'll find that it disappears. Analysis. Fiber is a highly effective way of controlling weight and cholesterol level and of interfering with the estrogen pathway. Because of its overall health-promoting benefits, there is no downside to fiber. Recommendation. Eat 35 to 60 grams of fiber per day. If you're trying to control your hunger or weight, be sure 10 grams of that total is soluble fiber. Step 7. Lower oxidative load. Through most of this book, we have looked at a highly targeted approach, how to intercept the critical estrogen pathway and achieve a substantial alteration in the pathway that fuels the growth and development of cancer. This section is quite different. It is aimed at blocking the initiation of cancer. Since we know so little about what pulls the trigger and converts a normal cell to a cancerous one, the approach is general. Lowering oxidative load. The most effective way of lowering oxidative load is with the fruits and vegetables that are the most powerful antioxidants. The great good news is that researchers have observed a 40% decrease in breast cancer for women who eat a diet rich in vegetables, even before fruit is added to the diet. Breast protective effects of fruits and vegetables. A diet high in fruits and vegetables is the most powerful proactive step you can take to lower oxidant load. These foods also display starches to cut glucose load. Dose. So, how much should you eat? If you really want to drop your oxidative load, 9 servings of vegetables and fruit a day is the way to go. That's the maximum recommended by the National Cancer Institute. Most high fruit and vegetable interventions use a 9-a-day program. While that sounds like a lot, vegetables are the most nutrient-dense source of minerals, vitamins, and other key nutrients. You're also getting the greatest number of nutrients for the fewest number of calories. These foods are high in the fibers that fight hunger and will naturally displace fats and refined carbohydrates in your diet. With 9 a day, blood levels of carotenoids can double in healthy people. Carotenoids are the pigments that give vegetables and fruits their colors, such as green, yellow, and red. Carotenoids have strong antioxidant and anti-cancer qualities. Beta-carotene is the most popular example, with lutein, zeaxanthin, and lycopene quickly gaining widespread scientific respect as powerful antioxidants. Carotenoids take about 6 days to hit peak blood levels. Intake of vegetables and fruits should be distributed throughout the day. Here's why. Oxidant load is reduced as soon as food is eaten and digested because the nutrients are absorbed into the blood. Carotenoids increase in blood right after meals. For example, there is a detectable increase in lycopene 6 hours after a meal of tomatoes, after which the level falls. Lycopene gives tomatoes their red color. Rats given a lycopene-enriched tomato formulation developed far fewer and much smaller breast cancers than rats without lycopene. New findings show that lycopene is most likely the carotenoid responsible for the protection against heart disease and cancer that had long been credited to beta-carotene. Lycopene is a much more powerful inhibitor of breast cancer growth than is beta-carotene. Curiously, lycopene is not well absorbed unless it has been cooked and concentrated. That makes tomato sauce, tomato paste, ketchup, and heated tomato juice the best sources. Vine-ripened tomatoes have the most lycopene. Many women find that the easiest way of following such a diet is to become a vegetarian. In fact, vegetarians have lower amounts of estrogen and less breast cancer, as evidenced by studies of Seventh-day Adventists who are strict vegetarians. Measuring oxidative load. So, you eat 9 fruits and vegetables a day. Is it doing any good? Dr. Zora Djurek, Ph.D., a breast cancer specialist at Detroit's Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute, has developed an inventive, first-of-a-kind test for oxidative load. Are your genes being pummeled by a daily firestone of oxidative damage? Dr. Djurek's test can tell you. She actually measures direct damage to DNA. Dr. Djurek has already been able to assess oxidative load in patients and determine the effect of diet. The surprise? The same diet has vastly different effects on different individuals. 5 fruits and vegetables may be enough to quench the oxidative flame in some, while 9 is too little in others. Within the next year, this test may become available, allowing you to determine where your diet stands. Do I believe that some foods are better than others? Absolutely. You will find charts in the inserts that display the most nutritious fruits and vegetables and special descriptions of those that have distinct effects. Vegetables. The unique and invaluable table, Antioxidant Capacity of Selected Vegetables, shows the ability of vegetables to act as antioxidants. The actual values are expressed as ORAC, or Oxygen Radical Absorbance Capacity. The oxygen radical is the substance that causes damage to genetic material. The ability of any antioxidant to soak up oxygen radicals is called absorbency. Despite all the hype, I was still surprised to see that garlic tops the list of foods able to absorb oxygen radicals. The more food you eat from the top of this list, the better. By coincidence, those vegetables that are best at making more good estrogen, from Brussels sprouts and broccoli to cabbage, are also great antioxidants. The best news is that palate-friendly vegetables like garlic, kale, onions, corn, and sweet potatoes are so high on the list. Looking for an easy rule of thumb to accumulate all the vegetables you need? Dr. Zora Djurek urges women in her studies to eat a wide variety of fruits and vegetables to make sure they get a lot of different antioxidants. She recommends 5 servings for daily intake as follows. 1 red vegetable, 1 orange vegetable, 1 dark green vegetable, 2 other vegetables. Serving size. 1/2 cup of cooked vegetables or 1 cup raw leafy vegetables. Fruits. If you're not in love with vegetables, the good news is that many fruits rival even the best vegetables at dropping your oxidative load. Please refer to the antioxidant capacity of selected fruits in the inserts. Dr. Zora Djurek's shortcut here is to eat the following. 2 vitamin C-rich fruits, 2 other fruits, serving size, medium-sized piece of fruit, or 6 ounces 100% fruit juice, or 1/2 cup diced fruit, or 1/4 cup dried fruit. In news reports, you'll often read about specific antioxidants. For years it was beta-carotene, but now lycopene is getting rave reviews. Please refer to the table for the foods with the highest antioxidant values. This unique table was assembled by Catherine Rice Evans in London, and it lists the antioxidant values of the very best antioxidants in the world and the foods in which you will find them. Antioxidant potential. The antioxidant power of each of the substances in this table is compared to the antioxidant power of vitamin E. The actual technical name is Trolox equivalent antioxidant activity. Trolox is a water-soluble vitamin E analog. So, as an example, quercetin would have 4.7 times the antioxidant capacity of vitamin E. That says quite a lot, since vitamin E is considered a powerful and effective antioxidant, especially in patients with heart disease. Supplement warning. There is a great temptation to rely on vitamin supplements to make up for a poor diet. Nowhere will that gain you less than with breast cancer prevention. Studies show proof positive that real fruits and vegetables provide a powerful effect, whereas there's no such scientific proof that individual vitamins do the same. Singling out individual nutrients is called reductionism to the extreme. This strategy is also beginning to backfire. Research links beta-carotene supplements with increased risk of both lung and colon cancer. Some researchers believe that beta-carotene may block other important carotenes, of which there are nearly 500, from being absorbed, thus increasing the cancer risk by depriving the body of these important nutrients. Sloan Kettering's breast cancer chief, Dr. Larry Norton, has shown that vitamin C can actually grow breast cancer cells in a petri dish. He recommends that his breast cancer patients take no vitamin supplements. Are there supplements you should consider? For protection against heart disease and neural tube defects, vitamins B6, B12, and folate are important and are often taken as supplements. Vitamin E helps to prevent fish oils from oxidizing in the body and protects against heart disease. However, there are no vitamin supplements known to protect against breast cancer, with the risk that some supplements, such as beta-carotene or vitamin C, could increase the cancer risk. The best advice is to get the maximum amount of vitamins from foods and then to supplement only after reviewing the need with your doctor. How to prepare vegetables. Do you hate vegetables? Join the club. At last count, perhaps 11% of Americans even ate the 5 daily servings of fruits and vegetables recommended. The lowest dietary compliance of all is for the consumption of fruits and vegetables. 140 million Americans are not eating the recommended amounts. Here's how we get around it at our house. We eat just a few really great-tasting vegetables, like sweet potatoes, that rank extremely high in antioxidants. We either sauté them or use a juicer. Mediterranean style. If you're really down on eating limp, mushy vegetables, here's a great no-compromise solution. This is the heart of the Mediterranean diet: vegetables sautéed in olive oil. This goes a long way toward satisfying your fat craving and can be a great deal healthier than a big dousing of low-fat but high-sugar salad dressings. The Vitamixer. We use a Vitamixer to create a quick-to-eat, super-powerful vegetable cocktail that will give you an instant buzz, guaranteed. The device is recommended by the Center for Science in the Public Interest in Washington, D.C. It crushes a plateful of vegetables and fruits, so you can drink them in one simple serving. This is an easy task to perform when you come home in the evening. The Vitamixer has a 37,000 RPM, nearly 2-horsepower lawnmower-quality engine that can blast pulp, skins, even seeds into smithereens. Standard juicers leave juice so gritty you may find it unpleasant to drink. The Vitamixer produces a smooth puree. The manufacturer claims that all the nutrients are retained and that the machine liberates more of them than even our own digestive systems could. Our family mixes up several a day to get our entire antioxidant load in a quick, painless way. The device comes with a number of terrific recipes. Doctors at Strang suggest mixing 1/3 of a head of broccoli and 1/4 head of cabbage mixed with an equal amount of carrot juice. Mongolian barbecue. This is my favorite way to eat vegetables. Broccoli, cabbage, roots, onion, garlic, peppers, up to 10 different vegetables are fried on a hot skillet in water. Add teriyaki sauce, and you'll find vegetables far crispier and tastier than you ever imagined. You'll truly love vegetables you always thought you hated. Vegetable danger. Many vegetarians believe that they eat a safer diet simply because they don't eat meat. Many replace meat in the diet with other foods rich in animal fat and cholesterol, such as cheese and whole dairy products. A recent study of nearly 11,000 health-conscious people, from meat eaters to vegetarians, showed that being a vegetarian didn't predict a decreased risk of disease, because many vegetarians still had diets high in calories and high in saturated fats. For instance, I'm always amused when I fly. I order a vegetarian meal. Pretty healthy, huh? The rice and beans look and taste terrific. They should. They are soaked in omega-6 fatty acids. I get an even bigger kick out of the country churn whipped butter. It even advertises 50% vegetable oil. However, the lead ingredient is a trans fatty acid, partially hydrogenated soybean oil. Even more amusing is the all-natural oatmeal raisin cookie, made from white flour, hydrogenated oils, and pure crystalline fructose among the lead ingredients. You could eat a strictly vegetarian diet that is high in omega-6 fats, high in glucose load, and low in both omega-3 fats and soy. Many vegetarians do just that, but they will derive little preventive benefit. Analysis. The simple truth is that most vegetables have a very non-specific role in fighting cancer. Vegetables do decrease the overall oxidative stress and do decrease the risk of breast cancer, but not in a dramatic way. If you have taken the measures already recommended in this program, then fruits and vegetables will add to the benefit. However, taken alone, without the other measures advocated in this program, they have only a modest effect because they do so little to interrupt the estrogen pathway. That's why results from a vegetarian diet have been disappointing. Too many vegetarians eat a diet loaded with ingredients that spike the estrogen pathway from omega-6 fats and too little fiber to a high glucose load. Recommendation: eat 5 to 9 fruits and vegetables per day that are near the high end of the tables provided in the inserts. Add 1.5 cups of green tea per day. Green tea has one of the highest antioxidant values known and is now being used in clinical trials, including one at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Step 8. Avoid chemical